Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Well, it's the much-anticipated ruling from the Supreme Court, the star case from this session, and it has finally been released. In the previous hour, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, upheld most of the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and ruled that the individual mandate, the key piece of the legislation, was constitutional under taxing authority. One place where the court did limit the act was in the Medicaid expansion, ruling that states can choose to not expand and not suffer a resulting penalty from the federal government. We're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act and health care in general. And we're asking you, what does this ruling mean for you? What is your health care situation? And what do you think our health care system should look like? The number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. Our email address is upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. We're on Twitter as well, at Utah Public Radio. And later in the program, we'll be getting reaction from Norman Thurston, who is Health Reform Implementation Coordinator for the state, and with two members of the Utah Legislature's Health System Reform Task Force, Representative Jim Dunnigan, a Republican, and Senator Gene Davis, a Democrat. We bring in now Judy Hillman from Utah Health Policy Project. Judy Hillman, welcome back to Access Utah.
Thanks. Good morning.
Good morning. So your general reaction to the action of the court today?
Really quite pleased, you know, very pleased. I think that this is exactly what should have happened, you know, if they needed to base their judgment on the authority of Congress to impose a tax. You know, I think that's fine, but the bottom line is these reforms are going to move forward. We're a bit daunted by all the catching up that we have to do in Utah to get the law fully implemented. That's going to take some elbow grease, for sure. I think this is a historic day, and we're very pleased. It means that we will be able to reform the insurance marketplace so that when any of us need insurance, it will be there at our time of need. We will share risk appropriately as a community. We won't have discriminatory pricing on premiums starting in 2014. Those are the changes we're talking about when we're talking about real comprehensive reform. So excited.
I want to maybe telescope back out and ask you what you see is the key, maybe the top two or three key problems with our healthcare system as it stood at least before the Affordable Care Act, and how the act addresses those.
Well, I'd say the number one problem, and certainly has the tragic dimension, is access. And we leave so many uninsured, and when you're uninsured, you're far less likely to go without medically necessary care. You're also more likely to show up in the ER, and those costs are passed on to all of us in the form of higher premiums. This is what we mean when we talk about the need for systemic reform, is that we're all in this together. And so the beauty of upholding the mandate is we're saying, okay, we are all in this together, and in order for the private market to be the foundation of a reformed healthcare system where all of us get our coverage, we need to share risk and bring the young people into the market. That's the wonderful role that the mandate plays, and without it, I think we would have been in trouble and the reforms would have been pretty disappointing.
So as the Affordable Care Act is implemented nationwide, do you think the goals will be achieved? Costs go down? More people have access?
Well, yes. I think that there's a real misnomer out there that there's no cost containment in the Affordable Care Act. I really would urge those who feel that way to sit down with this bill, with a nice Diet Coke or whatever you drink to stay awake, and read through it. You'll see hundreds and hundreds of pages devoted to cost containment measures. This, within 10 years, the Affordable Care Act, and this is according to the conservative estimates of the Congressional Budget Office, within 10 years, the Affordable Care Act pays for itself. But for that to succeed, there are some upfront investments. And you do have to have that mandate because that's what allows you to stabilize costs in the entire marketplace. So this is what we're talking about. These are the structural changes that we're making, and the mandate was a key mechanism for doing that. That's why we're pleased today, and I would just say we're ready to roll up our sleeves and catch up on implementation in Utah.
Judy Hillman from Utah Health Policy Project joins us later in the hour. Norma Thurston from the state, and we'll have Representative Dunnigan and Senator Davis from the legislature. We'd love to hear from you how the Affordable Care Act, now upheld mostly, will affect you. What's your health care situation? We'd love to hear your story. And if you disagree with the ACA, what do you think the system ought to look like? The number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. The email upraxis@gmail.com, upraxis@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter as well, at Utah Public Radio. I want to run past an experience. I was talking to a friend the other day who would, in my mind, very much benefit from the Affordable Care Act. You could probably put her in the poor category. And probably can't afford the insurance. She's worried about the mandate. She would be required to purchase insurance and know whether or not she can do so.
Okay.
I wonder if you could respond to that.
Well, I'd say, first of all, there are some questions about, there was an odd ruling on the Medicaid expansion, and we're still trying to come to terms with what that means. The Medicaid expansion is, by the way, it is still there, it's still upheld, it's still part of the act. It's just that the federal government's enforcement mechanism may be a little tricky for states. In other words, it used to be that the feds, according to the way it's written in the Affordable Care Act, if a state doesn't comply with the Medicaid expansion, not only would they lose the Medicaid expansion money, the federal money that goes towards paying for the Medicaid expansion, but they would lose their current Medicaid dollars as well, which is a key piece of our safety net. And that was a powerful enforcement mechanism. Well, Chief Justice Roberts, while he voted to uphold the Affordable Care Act mandate and all, he did kind of parse out that Medicaid expansion so that now the feds, it looks like the feds can only withhold the Medicaid expansion money, the federal match that goes with that, and not necessarily withhold the Medicaid money that states already have. So we're digging deep into that. We're doing our analysis. We have our press conference at 11 a.m. at the state capitol in the old Supreme Court chambers, and that's where we will have a deeper analysis of this. But, I'd say for your friend and for folks who might have a hard time following the mandate, I will point out that there's the penalty, which is now understood as a tax. But also, if you can demonstrate hardship for one reason or another, and certainly if the Medicaid expansion is not in place and you have a difficult time participating in the mandate, you can get out of it if you can demonstrate that on your taxes.
Okay.
So, I will say also that in Massachusetts, the mandate works well. It's not a big deal. And people, are not generally choosing to pay this penalty.
Let's go to a caller. Mark in Logan, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I used to call in quite a bit, and I haven't called in years, but I can't really speak to the, nationally, the bigger benefits or costs of this program, but for me personally, it is just going to be huge. I'm a small employer here in town. I have 6 employees, yet I work part-time to get health insurance, and it's actually a topic I'm surprised hasn't come up more, is entrepreneurship. And lack of access to health care is keeping people from starting a small business. It's actually kind of financially reckless to quit an employer with good health insurance to go try and wing it and start a small business. So for me, I'm celebrating. I can quit my part-time job and focus on my business full-time.
So this will actually help business. The argument's usually on the other side.
Right. Oh, yeah. It shocks me that more people haven't pointed out. There's so many people that have great business ideas. And like I say, it's financially risky to take your family off insurance. I'm in a situation where my family would be a horrible business risk as an insurer. Like, would be foolish for them to insure us. We'd cost them money, most likely.
Mm.
And the way our healthcare system is set up is we privatize the gains. You know, those people that are healthy, the private companies got the profits from them. Then we socialize the losses with Medicare, poor people on Medicaid and whatnot. And so for me, I couldn't really take the risk of going into the private pool. And then if this didn't go through, if they could just throw me off their rolls, financially that would be the right decision for them to do. So, like I say, I've been working part-time job while I have 6 employees to keep insurance for myself. So I'm ecstatic.
Thanks, Mark, for that. Your reaction, Judy Hillman.
Well, Mark, I'm really glad that you called. A couple of things come to mind. It's true that we have interviewed many people in our story bank who've been in a situation of job lock, right, where they've had to hold on to a job with a large employer, let's say, and it's interfered with their ability to start a small business or sustain a small business. Now, with the ruling that occurred today, that kind of nonsense is going to stop. And at the same time, small businesses like Mark's are going to have an easier time offering coverage to their employees. They're going to have incentives. They will never have a mandate, an employer mandate themselves. They will not face that. Starting in 2014, they will have the ability to share risk with other small businesses, other small groups. So they will be on a level playing field with large corporations. What we're talking about, I think, are some real benefits to the economy and to entrepreneurship by, again, upholding most of the ACA, including the what's called modified community rating, where we share risk, finally, as a community.
Hmm. We're talking with Judy Hillman from Utah Health Policy Project. Later on, Norma Thurston from the state, and we'll talk with a couple of legislators to conclude the program. And we're looking for your responses to the Supreme Court's ruling today, upholding mostly the Affordable Care Act. Medicaid provision is the one exception, somewhat limited, but the mandate was upheld as a tax. And the rest of the act mostly upheld. The number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or upraxis@gmail.com is the email, upraxis@gmail.com. Our caller, Mark, called 1-800-826-1495. You can as well. Judy Hillman, the Utah Health Exchange. This is something the state is attempting. We're going to talk a little bit more in depth about this with Dr. Thurston later on. Does this ruling affect that?
Yes, it does. I think Norm's going to know more. I think we have the beauty of our exchange is that we have a lot of experience trying to operate exchanges. I think we have fallen short on some of the major changes that I know most small businesses and individuals have been looking for, right? They want to be able to share risk. They want real relief from rising healthcare costs. But all of the sort of technical aspects of the exchange, the focus on transparency of cost and quality information, having that information at your fingertips so that the market will be driven towards value, high-value plans, that's something where I think Utah can shine. It's now, we have a real tight deadline, though, barking down our neck, though, is come this November and January, we must demonstrate the ability to operate the exchanges according to the federal standards for exchanges. And that's where, I hope we do choose to operate it and to adapt our exchange to those standards. If we don't, then the feds will do it for us. Mm-hmm. So, again, I prefer local control. I think we do a lot of things really well, and that's where we have a lot of work to do.
That's usually the argument against a federal program. The states just can do it better. In fact, talking with Dr. Thurston, that's what he's saying, that the states can do it better, including Medicaid. And I know the state's very concerned. Governor Herbert has talked with me about this, and Dr. Thurston as well. They believe they could do a better job with the Medicaid funds just with the local policies.
Yeah. Well, I think we've had 3 years to get our exchange to work. And I'll just give you a sense of scale. We have 67,000 small businesses in Utah, and right now there are 225 small businesses on Utah's exchange. We've seen no discernible increase in our insurance rate in the state, and no real dent in costs, in limiting cost growth. So I'm not seeing the results that Norm is talking about. And again, I don't think that we had the equipment. I don't think we had the right principles undergirding what we're doing for our exchange to work at all. I think you've got to have that mandate, and that's why today's decision is so important.
One of the arguments that I've heard against a system maybe moving toward a system like the Affordable Care Act and away from totally private is that such systems, while providing access to everyone, do hold down costs by limiting access to some services, holding down access to some services. I don't know if you see that as a danger with the Affordable Care Act being implemented.
No, I don't. And here again, I think that one of the things that's a hot topic right now, and it's in process at the state level, is determining what's called an essential health benefit standard. So, you know, states have a lot of flexibility, by the way, in what those standards look like within reason. And, you know, I think what you have is kind of a balancing act, right? Of course, you want this benefit, you want that benefit, and, you know, I want acupuncture, and so-and-so wants this. You know, you can have all those things, but then you end up with a market premiums no one can afford. So you've got to find that sweet spot. And I think you're talking to a good job of that, because what you want to have happen is you want value-based benefit design. You want evidence-based medicine to guide these decisions about what should be in the benefit package, what claims should be paid and what not paid. And the Affordable Care Act supports that kind of a process.
The legislature's Health Policy Task Force is taking input, is it not, about this essential benefits package?
As we speak.
As we speak.
Everybody,
so, yeah.
come forward.
and this is part of the Affordable Care Act, is it not? The essential benefits package, how does that fit into the Affordable Care Act? And then who in the end decides what the package is?
Well, states have a choice about what standard they use. You know, they can use the standard of the largest small group plan in the state, federal standard. So I think that, you know, it's important, though, for that standard to be defined by the local community, right? Because we all have, all of our markets are different. So, I mean, that, again, is the beauty of the Affordable Care Act, is it gives states tremendous flexibility about, you know, really critical matters like what benefits are covered.
We are asking you, how does the Affordable Care Act affect you? Essentially upheld today by the Supreme Court in a 5-4 ruling, Chief Justice Roberts joining the liberal wing of the court. The one exception, the Medicaid expansion, the penalty for that, essentially the teeth removed there. But the mandate was upheld as a tax, and the rest of the act stands, according to the Supreme Court in a ruling just about an hour old now. And we're talking about it on Access Utah. We'd love to get your reaction at 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or upraxcess@gmail.com. Judy Hellman, I asked Dr. Thurston, I'll be asking legislators, I'm interested as we look at what can be sort of dry policy. Who comes to mind for you? Is there a specific people or segment of population that personalizes this issue for you?
Yes. In fact, she's sitting right here in front of me because we're getting ready for our press conference, and I'm wondering if Christine wants to say anything about your situation and how you're feeling today.
I got to say, hello. From my part, it is a great day. It means my husband can retire at a decent age, so that I can still have health insurance, and I don't have to pay 40% more than a gentleman does. So I am, like, just so excited that they went the right way in their decision.
So what was your worry if the Affordable Care Act had not been passed? How would that affect your situation?
Me, myself, I actually am uninsurable, and I had to rely on the federal program, which is actually, when you look at it, really not a very good health plan policy, and it's twice as expensive. It's just, for me as an individual female at 47 years old, to have a $5,000 deductible, I was going to have to spend almost $8,000 a year to have day one of coverage. And that, to me, is just not affordable insurance. And the insurance actually is bad insurance. It'll cover $400,000 a year and a $1.5 million lifetime max. And I have a friend that works up at the Huntsman Cancer Institute that talks about a client that had $1 million bill in like a day.
Well, thank you so much, Christine. Appreciate that. Well,
okay, you're welcome. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
And Judy, Christina will be with you at the press conference, I understand.
Yes, and several consumers and providers, the white coats, so lots of people.
Mm-hmm. And that, tell us again, where and when?
It's at the state capitol in the old Supreme Court chambers, so the third floor of the big fancy building on the east end.
And just a minute left in this segment. What you talked about the elbow grease. what needs to happen going forward in the state of Utah?
Well, you know, I don't know yet because I'm sitting in my office, but, you know, there could be an outcry, right, as you might imagine, in Utah. And, you know, I don't want to think that some of the Utah values are somehow at odds with the values that were ultimately upheld, really the moral values that were upheld by today's ruling. But if that's the case, you know, we have our work cut out for us. I know that there have been some discussions in the legislature about, you know, trying to secede from Medicaid, which states can do. They call it the nuclear option. So those are the kinds of things that we need to kind of keep at bay and focus on the prize. And the prize, let's remember, where the vision came from. It came from Romney. It came from Massachusetts. It's working well. And it actually came from a conservative think tank called the Heritage Foundation. This whole mandate came from conservative think tanks. And then we allowed all of this to become a political blood sport. I think we need to get away from that and get back ultimately to the moral rightness of what we're doing as a nation.
Let me ask you to hold on just one more minute. We did have an email come in, and I want to have you react to this. This is Ellen, who's emailing us, by the way, at upraxis@gmail.com. Ellen says, I'm very happy with the decision. Back in the days of the Clinton reform attempt, my dad was easing into retirement, working at a small business. He worked there a year longer than he wanted to because the business was having trouble finding a replacement they could afford. They finally found one well-qualified person who really needed and wanted the work, but he had a pre-existing condition, and the insurer for the company said if they hired the man, the entire company would be dropped. So well-qualified workers stayed on welfare. I always wondered if that would have been, should have been, a violation of the ADA. That's what Ellen says.
Mm. Well, I mean, the good news about today's ruling is that kind of behavior, you know, is going to stop. What we've been doing as a nation is that we've been punishing people if they get sick, basically, or if they have a disability. We've been saying that you don't have a right to health care, that somehow your needs or your needs are less than the rest of us. And what we're recognizing now ultimately is that, you know what, we're all human beings, and eventually we're going to get sick. We're going to, as my mother would say, we're going to have some kind of condition.
Mm-hmm.
and we need to pay for that up front as a society. That's where we're headed, and that's what's ultimately going to bring down costs for all of us, so that when we need health care, it's there for us at our time of need.
Judy Hellman from Health Policy Project has been with us. The press conference is 11 o'clock this morning at the state capitol. Judy Hellman, thanks so much.
Thanks.
And coming up following a brief break, I'll be talking with Norman Thurston, who works on health policy for the state. We'll get his reaction later in the program. Representative Dunnigan and Senator Davis from the legislature's Health System Reform Task Force. All that coming up following a break.
Support for Utah Public Radio is provided by Red Mount Resort in St. George, an adventure retreat blended into the Red Rock Cliffs and Canyons of Southern Utah. Offering fitness, whole-body wellness programs tailored to individual needs, information at Red Rock Mountain or redmountainresort.com.
I want to talk at first, Norman Thurston, about the Utah Health Exchange. This is what Utah has come up with, sort of a modest beginning, but more ambitious goals in the future. Where is the Health Exchange now? What is it?
Utah Health Exchange right now is just right under 7,000 covered lives, and it's strictly related to our small business defined contribution program. So this is a fabulous opportunity for small businesses, some who have not offered insurance before. In fact, about a third of our businesses have not offered insurance before their employees. An opportunity for them to come in and create a health benefit for their employees that gives employees choice of health plan and network and also plan design. It's a kind of an innovative solution for a unique problem that we have here in the state of Utah.
And so these would be private companies which offer these plans, and you can go online and choose which plan you want?
Exactly. So if I were a small business owner, suppose I had 15 or 20 employees, what I would do is I would offer them a specific amount of money, and they would be able to go onto this website and shop for the insurance policy that meets their needs from three different insurance carriers. We have all the different hospital networks in the state. Provider networks are all available. And then if the employee picks something that's more expensive than what the employer is willing to pay, they pay the difference. If they pay something that's cheaper than what the employer is willing to pay, they can take that money and put it into a health savings account if they qualify for that. So it's just an opportunity for employees to have more choice and more opportunity.
Now, the advantages of this from the employer's point of view is you have certainty, right, about what you're going to spend for your employees.
Exactly. You can know in advance, so you can do a five-year business plan or whatever you need to do for your financing. A lot of times, you know, banks will want a business plan that's more than just for the current year. And you can spell it out and say, this is what I'm going to be able to do over the next 2, 3, 4 years. And so you'll know exactly what your cost is going to be. And the employees also get an opportunity to choose, and they're doing this all with pre-tax dollars, which, you know, obviously people could choose outside of employment, but doing it through your employer, you get to do this, and it's all tax advantaged.
Now, have you seen an increase? I think you mentioned that increase in employers who are now offering insurance for their employees because of this.
Yeah, so we're right at about 300 employers, and just about a third of those have never offered insurance before. So we're still growing, and we're still kind of in the building phases, kind of figuring everything all out. But at the end of the day, we do feel like that this creates an opportunity for companies that couldn't, mostly for financial reasons or for whatever reasons, offer a health benefit before. Now they can. It's a new tool. It's a new way to do things for a lot of companies that just couldn't do it before.
Now, right now, this is for small businesses?
Yes, small businesses. And we define that in the state of Utah as businesses with between 2 and 50 employees. Someday, who knows, down the road it could be expanded to larger employers, but for today it's just 2 to 50.
I was going to ask you, what is the goal? Expand this to all businesses?
Well, that's where the Supreme Court thinks it comes into play because, you know, depending on how that turned out this morning.
And neglected to mention, we're fading down this interview so that I can get this in. My conversation with Norman Thurston, Health Reform Implementation Coordinator, State of Utah, was recorded a couple of days ago because of a scheduling conflict. So when we talked, we didn't know what the Supreme Court was doing. You'll hear Dr. Thurston in this conversation outline some scenarios, and that's why. Conversation continues with Norman Thurston from the state.
How will the Utah Health Exchange be affected if this morning the Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of the entire Affordable Care Act?
You know, if the whole thing was declared constitutional this morning, it really doesn't change. In fact, in any case, it doesn't really change what we're doing with the Utah Health Exchange. We can continue to work on our small business program with or without the Affordable Care Act. So it's this core idea that we came up with is as a state, it predates the Affordable Care Act, and it's not dependent on the Affordable Care Act to survive. The rest of what we do, of course, is dependent on how that ruling comes down. But this particular piece of it is more or less independent of whatever the decision is today.
What about the mandate? If that is struck down, does that affect Utah Health Exchange?
Not on this aspect of it. I suppose if the mandate is still around, that will drive business into the exchange because people will be scrambling for a place to get insurance. But if the mandate goes away, then we're just business as usual. So really not a critical issue for the Utah Health Exchange proper as it exists today.
What about the Medicaid expansion part of the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, the Medicaid expansion, that's something that's not related particularly to the small business program. It's a different program entirely. We were looking at, with the Medicaid expansion as it was outlined in the law, growing our Medicaid program by significant amounts. I hesitate to put a number on it, but it would be at least 50%. And that would be 50% more people coming into Medicaid than we've ever had in the past. And so if that's upheld in the law, that's a significant challenge for the state of Utah in terms of mostly funding. Initially there's some relief from some additional federal funding, but that does go away over time. And how do you create funding opportunity for a program that's already straining our state budget and getting in the way of funding important issues like transportation and public education and critical priorities for us. So that's going to be a challenge for us if we have to continue to do that.
And what if the Supreme Court struck down the ACA and in its entirety? It now reverts to the states, and you see Utah as a good model?
Well, that would be a happy problem to have. We'd be back to where we were 2 years ago, which is identifying local issues and identifying local solutions for those issues. You mentioned Medicaid. Medicaid expansion was not something that we had identified as a solution to our problems. What we want to do is reform our Medicaid program, make it more market-oriented, and make it more competitive. And so we would do things to improve the Medicaid program without blowing through the budget. Reality is that our whole vision was, let's try to keep this Medicaid program alive by keeping it efficient and keeping it cost-effective. So if we had the flexibility to not deal with all of the new federal rules, we could go back and work on the issues that we were working on a couple of years ago.
This part of the program, we're talking, of course, about the Affordable Care Act, the Supreme Court's ruling on it, and health care reform in general, specifically as it relates to Utah. And we're talking right now with Norman Thurston, Health Reform Implementation Coordinator for the state of Utah. Norman Thurston and I spoke a couple of days ago, and so while we're talking, we don't know how the Supreme Court ruled. We're speaking more in general. We did want to speak with Mr. Thurston, though, because he's been instrumental in health policy with the state and implementation of the health exchange, which is the beginnings of Utah's health reform. Governor Herbert, of course, is bullish on this, and he sees this as the beginnings, at least, for a model program, which could then be, modeled for other states.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We don't intend to say that to every state that we found the magic bullet and that the Utah solution is everyone else's solution. The Utah solution is just that. It's a Utah solution. If another state wants to come and take a look at what we've done, if they want to learn from our experiences, for good or for better or for worse, they're welcome to do that, and we would encourage them to do that. But we really think that each state has the opportunity and the ability to look at what their state's problems are and come up with their own solutions. And we're just thrilled to be one of 50 states that can collaborate and share information as to what's the best solutions, the best current thinking out there for dealing with different types of problems.
In terms of policy and principle, is a totally private healthcare system desirable? In other words, totally private, is that able to take care of the uninsurables and the poor and those types of people, or will government in some form always be in the mix?
Now, we recognize that there is a very small segment of the population that is going to need some help. So you look at specific areas that you can. It's not hard to imagine that there are people out there that are just not going to be able to make things work on their own. And we do have a responsibility as a government to make sure that those people are taken care of. But it's a much, much smaller segment of the population than we're currently being asked by the federal government to assist. And if we had the money given to us as a state and said, look, here's the money, go figure out how to take care of these people who really need it, we're sure that we could do a much better job at finding ways to solve people's problems. And a lot of what we intend to do in terms of Medicaid reform or our other reforms are bring in market forces. So to the extent that you can get the government out, you get the government out. But if the government does have to be involved, we want to bring in as much market force as we can to keep that program competitive, to keep it efficient, and to make sure that we're not wasting money where we don't need to waste money.
Some would say, in fact, I've heard this argument, market forces in some cases are exactly the wrong forces, and they point to a marked increase in administrators in healthcare companies versus the growth in physicians, and the fact that the incentive in some cases in insurance companies is to disallow disbursement of monies to people who've paid in.
Yeah, well, part of this has to do with that we really don't have all of the market forces aligned in the insurance industry. For the vast majority of people who are insured today, they had absolutely no ability to choose the insurance plan that they've got. So they may have gotten their choice between two or three options, but they're probably with the same company. And so if you don't have the consumers choosing, it's hard to imagine that you're getting the full force of the markets coming down to bear on that marketplace to really get the discipline into those companies to do the right thing. And that's one of the things that the defined contribution plan within the Utah Health Exchange does, is to bring that discipline into the marketplace, because now you have individual families choosing the right thing for them. And if the suppliers don't respond, you know, they'll be disciplined by the marketplace. That's different than we have today in the current environment.
I wonder if you could expand on that. What are the market forces that need to be added for the full market system to work properly?
Sure. So if my employer is making the decision, their incentives are aligned with the insurance company. They want things to be cheap because when something is paid, it's not just the insurance company paying for it. It's really my employer that's paying for it as well. So what's the incentive alignment there? Well, the employer's incentives are aligned with the insurance companies to try to keep things under control and to not do things. Whereas the employee, if the employee were choosing, what do I really want as an employee? I want a health insurance policy that's going to keep me healthy, that's going to keep me productive, that's going to keep me at work longer, and that's going to be able to make me have a long, happy life. That's what I would want out of my insurance company. And so as an employee, I would be looking for companies that share my vision and not the cost-cutting vision. Sometimes, I don't mean to be disparaging of employers, but some employers have a very short-sighted vision of this benefit. They want to just get through another year and keep the cost down for another year. Whereas as an employee, I would like to see this as a long-term relationship, like I do with my auto insurance. You know, I've had the same auto insurer now for almost 20 years and feel no reason to change because I'm satisfied that we're on the same page with meeting my family's needs. My insurance company, in the last 18 years, I've probably had 5 different health plans, and I've not been the one who's made those choices over that time period. It's been somebody else telling me, oh, we're switching plans, or I've switched jobs and had to switch plans because I switched jobs. And that's just not the sort of long-term relationship, long-term incentives that you would need to get where we really need to get as a system.
If you just joined us here in Access Utah, I'm talking with Norman Thurston, Health Reform Implementation Coordinator for the State of Utah. Dr. Thurston's been a policy analyst and health economist for Utah Department of Health in various roles past 8 years. And before joining the state, he worked for 8 years as an assistant professor of economics at Brigham Young University. He's published several articles on healthcare markets. His areas of specialty include insurance markets, healthcare provider markets, labor markets, and public finance economics. Right now, not an opportunity to call in, although you can call in or email us in preparation for when we talk with a couple of legislators. That's coming up shortly. They're on the health task force for the legislature. And that's Representative Dunnigan and Senator Davis. That's how we'll conclude the program. We're talking with Dr. Thurston a couple of days before the fact because of scheduling conflicts, but we did want to talk with Norman Thurston about this subject. I wonder, just in general, any health care reform, I think obviously would want to increase access to health care. Want to contain costs, want to improve quality. Of course, there's arguments about which system best does that. I wonder if you were to tick off your principles for an ideal healthcare system, what those would be.
Well, I don't know that I could give you a full explanation of a complete system in the time that we have, but some of the principles that we would want, that I would want to see, that would, I think would get us in the right direction would be things like personal responsibility, so that when a person makes a decision and makes a choice, that they also get the consequences for better or for worse. So if somebody decides to exercise and be healthier, that they're going to reap the benefits financially and physically from that. If somebody else decides engage in substances that might not be healthy for them, that they'll also then be expecting to pay more over their lifetime because they've made those choices. And so I think that personal responsibility and choice would be a hallmark of the system. Another issue that I think you'd have to cross, and you mentioned this with having adequate access to health care, is make sure that we've got the type of contracts with our health care providers that reward health care providers for keeping people healthy. So a lot of times we hear about physicians not wanting to go into certain specialties because they can't make as much money because that type of service isn't valued. Now, from a market perspective, that makes sense. If we're properly valuing what those specialties do, if we're paying specialties that keep people healthy and make them more productive more than specialties that don't, then I think we've got things lined up. But I really don't think that, for the most part, our market today does a very good job of identifying where the real value is and rewarding the providers that provide that real value. It's just the way the contracts are written and the way things are done. Providers are rewarded for doing more, whether or not that has any impact on the patient. It's just they're rewarded for doing more. So specialties that can do more get paid more, and specialties that don't have a lot that they can do even if it's really effective what they do, they just seem to not get rewarded in the marketplace. So those are a couple of changes that I would like to see made, is that we pay for keeping people healthy, and that we also reward individuals in the marketplace who've made good decisions and who are pursuing paths that will lead to the things that will make them happy over their lifetime.
Are there examples out there? Some people cite Canada as a good example, England, that's more on the, you know, what opponents would call socialized medicine, maybe more toward the more privatization. Are there good models out there that U.S. can follow?
I wouldn't say there's any system that we envy right now. Part of the issue that we see is that if you look at systems that have tried to make improvements, they do things differently. There's no question that things are different in Canada, they're different in the United Kingdom, in Japan or Germany, or whatever, the, you know, the usual models that people roll out. But when you look at it, there are pros and cons to those systems. There are cases in every one of those systems where somebody that in the U.S. would get care and would be able to get that service in those systems has a hard time getting access to the care. So part of the way they keep the cost down is by limiting access. And those are some very difficult decisions. There are some things that we have seen in systems that I think we could look at that would help us. There was some recent talk about one of the systems in Europe where the insurance company creates a more longer-term relationship with the patient, and if they achieve specific goals over time, they're rewarded with a rebate of all of their premiums. So, for example, if you create a baseline that says, look, as of today, here's your baseline. Over the next 5 years, we expect you to be here. It's going to go from A to B. If you can do better than that projection, we'll refund maybe a quarter or maybe 10% of your premiums that you paid over that time period. And again, that sort of aligns incentives. It helps reinforce good behaviors by both the providers and the patient, because now everybody's engaged in producing health instead of producing services. And that's kind of the disconnect that we'd like to correct in our system, is providing health and not services.
I wonder, when you talk to people about healthcare, if you sense some frustration, people, I certainly hear some frustration from people who tell me, you know, in the richest country on earth, we still have people who are sick unnecessarily, or who die because they're underinsured, and people who are uninsured, underinsured, that the costs rise steeper, on a steeper curve than other places in the world, higher cost per capita for healthcare. We just can't seem to get it right in this country.
Yeah, I think what ends up happening is that whatever metric people that do that want to put forward, they, you know, you can always find a metric that shows that we're not getting our money's worth. That for some reason, you know, and when you look at this area or that area, we're spending a lot of money, not getting a lot of bang for the buck. And I think that kind of goes to what I was talking about earlier, is there are specific areas where we're spending a lot of money on services that don't really produce health, that we have some misaligned incentives in our systems to do that. But one of the things that in the U.S. we do phenomenally well compared to other countries is acute episodic care, or acute care episodes. So we do very well at saving people that have traumatic injuries, that have sudden heart attacks and strokes and things like that. Our system does a great job at doing that. Where we probably need to improve, and this is some information that some of our partners have shared with us, is we don't really do as well as other countries in preventive things, about keeping people healthy. And I think that's just indicative of this problem, is we pay when people do stuff. We don't pay for people to get healthy and to stay healthy. And that's kind of just the general issue that I'd like to see corrected in our system, is I'd like to see primary care physicians more motivated to have a patient that really never needs health care. That would be ideal, but you can see the problem of paying someone more for getting a patient that never needs health care. That's sort of killing the goose that lays the golden eggs, and so no providers want to base a financial model on that. Certainly they agree in principle, but when it comes down to how do you then keep our systems afloat and how do we provide this care, it's a real hard problem and something that we definitely need to work on. If, you know, if whatever happened today with the Supreme Court allows us to, we would really like to start tackling some of these really difficult problems about aligning incentives and moving forward.
We've been asking, and we continue to ask people through the hour, listeners, you know, how the ruling would think would affect them and what their healthcare situation is. I've been asking all my guests to ask you as well. When you think of these issues, they can be, you know, quite abstract. How do you personalize that for yourself? Who do you worry about when you think about these these issues, or what segment of the population do you, you know, do you especially think about?
Well, I think that, you know, what strikes me as the most interesting segment of the population is the average sort of hardworking person that's just trying to make it all work. So, you know, I don't, you know, we have a pretty good safety net system for the most vulnerable populations. We have a reasonably good system for those that are sort of doing fairly well off and can kind of afford to pay out of their pocket if they needed to. But people who are out there saying, like, how do I make this work? One of the things that people don't recognize is that as a nation, we spend, on average, 18 to 20% of our income on health care. But if you asked most families if they could put 18 to 20% of their family budget aside for health care, it would be so hard for them to just even imagine what that would be like when they've got other things that are competing for their budget needs. And so that's what I worry about mostly, is how do you create a system that gets the proper amount of budgeting aligned so that people can actually make this work in terms of a whole package. But it's expensive, and that's one of the things that, you know, we can't hide behind the fact and say, well, it's not expensive because somebody else is going to pay for it, because there's not anybody else to pay for it when we're talking about something that's, you know, nearly a fifth of GDP is going to this one sector. If you're going to fund that from somewhere else, I'm not sure where that money is going to come from. That's a big, big animal to feed.
Tom Williams with you on Access Utah. My conversation from Tuesday with Norman Thurston, Health Reform Implementation Coordinator for the state of Utah. We were speaking before we knew how the Supreme Court would rule. Of course, this morning we learned the Supreme Court essentially upheld the Affordable Care Act, upholding the mandate as a tax measure. And it did disallow federal penalties for states who did not want to expand Medicaid. We're going to continue this conversation with two members of Utah Legislature's Health System Reform Task Force following a brief break.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
We conclude the program today by talking to two members of the legislature's Health System Reform Task Force. Task Force has been listening to constituents around the state on an essential health benefits package. And we are joined now by a chairman of the task force, Representative Jim Dunnigan. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
And Senator Gene Davis is a member of the task force. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
I want to get to just general reaction to what you've heard this morning. The Affordable Care Act essentially upheld Medicaid provision, the penalty there disallowed. Representative Dunnigan, what's your reaction?
Well, it's confusing to me because when the bill was presented to Congress a couple of years ago, it was presented that this is not a tax. This, you know, they didn't want any have their fingerprints on a tax increase. So the bill sponsor said this is not a tax. But this today, the Supremes had to go down to the second level to find a way to uphold the individual mandate by saying it is a tax. Mm-hmm. So President Obama a couple of years ago said this is not a tax, and his presenter said it in the Congress it's not a tax. Now they're saying it is a tax. So that's confusing to me.
Senator Davis, your general reaction.
My general reaction is the fact that now, as a state, we need to move forward and implement the portions that are responsible, the responsibility of the states to move forward to get that done and control our own destiny on health care reform. Mm.
Representative Dunnigan, the measure that the Supreme Court essentially did not uphold was a federal penalty for states that did not want to participate in the federal version of Medicaid expansion. Do you think that means Utah is going to go its own way with Medicaid expansion or not expanding?
Utah is somewhat of an independent state, and you know that's something we're going to have to evaluate more fully. I will say that Medicaid, the current existing Medicaid, is increasing and growing at a rate that we cannot sustain in Utah and probably the rest of the country. So we're going to have to decide, do we want to expand that model and make things worse? And it looks like the Supremes have given us an opportunity to at least evaluate our destiny in that area.
Senator Davis, what is next for the state with this ruling? What are you most concentrated on?
I think the one thing that we need to look at right now is where we're headed with our exchange the individual mandate, where we can move that, our basic plan. I think one of the things we need to look at is, you know, what's left there that we as a state have got to take a look at and we have to address, and before the feds take it over for us. Mm. And so my biggest concern right now is the fact that we need to look at the things that we can control our own destiny on and get that taken care of.
Representative Dunnigan, with essentially upholding of the Affordable Care Act, with regard to Utah, what most disappoints you then about this ruling that you see Utah could have done but now may not be able to do?
Utah started on health reform a number of years ago. In the last 2 years, we have been somewhat sidetracked by the federal reform and trying to have to comply with their efforts. And what we have gotten away from, both on a state and a federal level, is bending the cost curve. People want lower health insurance rates. That means we need to have lower health care costs. We have got to incentivize people to take more responsibility for their own health and to do it more efficiently. And we've been sidetracked on this, as I said, in the state level, and there's very little in the federal reform to control costs, and there's quite a bit in there that will increase costs.
Just about a minute left, and I'm curious from both of you, starting with Senator Davis, what you've been hearing, what strikes you most from what you've been hearing from constituents on this essential health benefits package?
I think what the benefit is going to be, is it going to cover their catastrophic problems that they may face in health and their families? Cost, I agree with the representative that cost is a very, very important factor in being able to manage where we're going. Hmm.
And Representative Dunnigan, what has struck you the most from this exchange with constituents?
Similar to Senator Davis, we've heard from many people that want a specific condition or diagnosis covered. But also we've heard from many people that said, don't load on so many things in the basic plan that our insurance becomes unaffordable.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll be continuing this conversation. A lot of work to be done, I'm sure, with the task force parsing through this ruling and continuing with Utah's health system reform. We appreciate Representative Dunnigan and Senator Davis coming on briefly with us. I'm sure we'll be continuing this conversation down the line. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Access Utah. This conversation can continue. Go to our website, upr.org. Click on today's episode of Access Utah and give us your comments. We'd be very curious to learn what you think about this issue. That's Access Utah for today. Join us again tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.